Hi, everybody. I'm Jeff Seckendorf, CEO of UTEs. I don't even know my name, my company anymore. Change. We did that five times.
Is the name changed?
Yeah, it's UTD Scuba Diving now, not Unified Team Diving.
Well, it's Unified Team Diving or UTD Scuba Diving.
Or UTD Scuba Diving.
You gotta have an official name.
It's UTD Scuba Diving.
Okay.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jeff Seckendorf, CEO of UTD Scuba Diving, and here with our training director, Ben Boss. Hey, Ben.
Hi, everyone.
And an amazing guest today. We have a UTD instructor, my old friend, Jeff Christensen, who's the DSO at the Seattle Aquarium here in the U.S. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Ben.
So for however many years we've been working together in UTD, Jeff and I, we've always had first name conflicts. So meet Jeff C, and I'm Jeff S.
I was just going to say the same thing exactly, because we have even have to put it in every single email. Is this Jeff C or Jeff S talking?
So that's been going on for I don't know how many years, long time. So this is the second or third podcast we've done on in the scientific diving realm. We did one, I think it's episode 2, where we spoke with Kim Cardenas about ghost net removal and ghost trap fishing gear removal diving, which is really interesting. I'm actually going out with those guys this weekend to go do a lobster trap search and recovery dive, which should be really interesting in the Los Angeles basin. So, we're back on the science thing here, and again, we're spread out all over the world, as is usual. I'm in San Diego, Ben's in Denmark, and Jeff is up in the northwest of the U.S. in Seattle. So, Jeff, can you kind of like, what's a DSO? What do you do? How do you get a DSO job and keep it for 25 years? And I mean, who are you?
Yeah, well, DSO is a diving safety officer, and that really came about as a function of occupational diving regulations in the United States. And so my role is to supervise and provide training for our scientific diving program at the Seattle Aquarium. And it's a great job. I mean, it's the reason I went into marine science, in order to get paid to go scuba diving. And for me, this has been like the best career I could ever possibly have.
Yeah, what do you do?
So what do I do? I'm a marine biologist, and for the majority of my career, I was both kind of a 50-50 split. I was running the temperate water fish program at the Seattle Aquarium, as well as supervising the diving program in both the instruction and operation of our dive program. Right now, I'm a full-time dive safety officer, and I share those duties with another dive safety officer at the aquarium, Joel Hollander. And what we do is we are basically on a day-to-day basis, we're making sure that we're operating a safe dive program. And that can be everything from repairing regulators to training classes to getting into diving in the exhibits ourselves or participating in some of our field diving, either collecting or research.
So, okay, so you ran by something that was really interesting, right? Diving in the exhibits. So I've had the incredibly great fortune to dive in an aquarium tank. And Ben, you have too, right?
On a couple occasions.
What's that like? How is that the coolest thing you've ever done in the water?
Well, I think it's fun. You know, it's in Denmark, there is a national museum, like a national aquarium for both freshwater and saltwater, which houses like the local fish life. And it's very interesting. We used to run some try dives in that big, what they call oceanarium. And it's quite cool because all the fish are very used to interaction. So you get very close. And they're all in one big tank, so they can't swim away very far. I've also done some diving in a huge net outside in the ocean. That was also related to an aquarium because they were making food for the fish in the aquarium.
That's crazy. So, yeah, the first time I dove in an aquarium was, Jeff, I think it was your IDC, right? Had you and Joel becoming instructors, or had Joel and somebody
No, you're correct. That was the IDC for Joel and myself, as well as the initial classes that we provided at the Seattle Aquarium. So that was when we were teaching our first six student candidates, in addition to Joel and myself.
I'll have to dig up the photographs from that, because they were. It's an amazing experience to be in a tank with the fish, like Ben said, that can't swim away, but watching the public stare at us, because in reality, you got six guys in an aquarium tank, you know, holding proper buoyancy, doing drills, doing all this other work, and the kids honestly couldn't care less about the fish at that point. All they're interested in is, what are all those scuba divers doing behind that glass wall? And it's very moonwalk-like, right? It's like you're in space against the window, waving at the little kids, and you can just see their eyes are lit up like crazy. It was one of the most interesting weeks I'd ever spent in the water doing that, not to mention that it was 42 Fahrenheit, which is about 5.5 Celsius.
Ooh. Yeah, it's a little bit nippy, but I agree so much. I mean, nothing, I'll never forget, you know, you never forget the first time you breathe scuba. And you know what it was like breathing underwater, and I'll never forget my first dive inside an aquarium. And I have been diving inside the exhibits at the Seattle Aquarium since 1980, and it has never, ever been a boring dive inside the underwater dome, for just the same reasons that you talked about, Jeff. Watching the people watch you, now you know exactly what a fish is experiencing from the other side on a daily basis. That's why they love it at the aquarium too. You know, it's an all-you-can-eat, managed predator environment. You know, so that, you know, the majority of our fishes seem to love it there. As Ben mentioned, they're habituated to us. We are not something that they're afraid of. We're something that they can choose to interact with us anytime they like. They can accept food from the divers or accept food from one of the broadcast feedings. But for many of these animals, the diver's presence is the only way food will get to them that they don't have to go out and forage for themselves. And there's limiting forage opportunities inside of an aquarium. You know, it is a natural, we're trying to have a natural representation of the Pacific Northwest wildlife. It's a somewhat artificially concentrated representation. And as such, we do need to be careful, you know, where we're taking food to, at when we're taking food there. But, you know, to bring it back to diving inside the aquarium, super fun, super exciting thing to do.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance, do it. Because do you offer, like, dives for the public in the Seattle Aquarium?
Our facility is too small to offer the tri-dive or the guest immersion programs. We're looking at constructing a new warm water exhibit in a brand new building on the waterfront, and that's that design process is underway right now. It's not currently planned to have a guest immersion program, but should we consider one in the future, that would probably be the location for us, because it's a whole lot easier to run it in a warm water exhibit than it is in a cold water exhibit.
I think they do them in LA, right? Doesn't the Long Beach Aquarium do them? Do you know?
I don't know. I'd have to ask Long Beach. You know, Monterey definitely has a program for kids to get involved. And a lot of large aquariums that have larger exhibits have guest immersion programs.
Okay, we'll have to find that out. So I want to aim this in a little bit toward the relationship between the aquarium and UTD. But first, I'm sort of interested in your interactive diving program, right? So you have a team of divers who go into the aquarium with full face masks and comms and talk to the visitors, right?
That's correct. You know, we base a major part of our diving program around underwater interpretation. And this was something we've been doing for probably about the last 15 years now, is when a guest comes to the aquarium and sees a diver underwater in the exhibit, that diver is on a full face mask and has the ability to interact with the guests. We actually have a core of six professional interpreters that the primary part of their job is to go down and do these interpretive dives on a daily basis. And really, they're our best mechanism for sharing our conservation messaging with the guests at the aquarium. Because anytime, as you pointed out earlier, anytime a guest comes in and they're looking at the aquarium, seeing all the fish, but the moment they see the diver, it changes their appreciation of the exhibit. The seeing somebody else underwater causes a bridge or a connection to the animals in our exhibits that you don't get when a diver's not present. I think I even pointed this out when we were walking around the aquarium, Jeff, that, you know, we had you walk in front of the window on Washington Waters exhibit, and it's a dynamic and exciting exhibit. But the moment the diver get in, it gives you a sense of scale that you didn't have before. And it's just like a magnet. It really changes people's perceptions of the underwater world when they can learn that through the bridge brought to them by the diver.
Does the diver interact with the audience through the communication?
Yes, they do. It's a managed interaction, so we will have an interpreter on the dry side as well, and that is part of the buddy team for that dive. So for our premier show dives, it's a single diver with their tender being on the floor in front of the exhibit talking with the guests. So the diver and the interpreter on the floor will do typically 10 to 15 minute presentations to our guests as they come through about a 1 hour period. In order to keep the traffic flow moving along, we limit the presentations to, again, that short, primarily 10 minutes. And then the diver will have about a half an hour of unprogrammed time where they may or may not be talking with the guests, or they'll spontaneously talk with the guests through the floor interpreter, and then they wrap it up with another 10-minute show at the end.
So I have a story about that tank, the one that we were in, because I had you, Joel, and somebody else lined up in front of me, and it was a pretty easy position to be in, right? I'm facing three divers, and we're starting to go through skills, right? It's an IDC, you're demonstrating skills, you're supposed to be holding perfect buoyancy, all this other stuff. And just as it started, Joel did something for which I'll never quite forgive him. He was like, wait, we have to all change positions.
Oh.
Do you remember this? I'm like, I don't really care, you know? So we swim around, and now I'm facing east instead of west, and they're facing west instead of east. And we start the whole thing again, and all of a sudden, I find out that I'm back kicking like I've never back kicked in my life, that there's a current in that pool, that tank, that was enough to drive anybody crazy. So for an hour, I'm like anaerobic back kicking and flipping off Joel. And he's just sitting there smiling, happy as a clam, because he knew the currents. And we turned it around the following day, I believe.
I think so too. Yeah, that's Joel's. He's got several good moves like that. It's a very complex environment. And just moving a foot to the right or a couple feet forward may take you out of that. Joel and I have certainly learned where all of the sweet spots are. And from as instructional staff, we try to maintain those positions as much as we can. But all of our staff have learned that as well. When we do an annual skills review for all of our divers, and we'll probably come back and talk about that in detail more often, but all of the divers try to do their annual skills reviews in those sweet spots whenever they can.
Makes good sense. It makes really good sense. So I want to kind of do this in pieces. So let's talk about the interpretive divers first. So when you, before UTD, right, which would have been with you, you were one of the earliest instructor candidates and instructors with us. So maybe 10 years ago, 10, 11 years ago. What was it like for you and the interpretive divers before you knew anything about us or this kind of training? Were you on the bottom? Were you doing good buoyancy? What was the story back then?
You know, Jeff, I think you said this really to us when you came to teach us our initial class. And maybe this is just your throwaway statement, but you said, you guys already know how to dive. And hopefully you saw that the majority of our divers had good core buoyancy skills. We've always made our divers be neutrally buoyant while diving, and we want them at specific points in the water column, and the ability to interact with the public, use their hands, have the interpretive skills, and the hands can be a big part of our divers' interpretive skills. without impacting their position in the water and without them having to hold on to something. And in the aquarium field, that's not always the case. There are a lot of aquarium presentations are done in other facilities with a diver on a rock or hanging onto a suction cup or vertically in the water column. And all of these were things that our diving program had already moved beyond. We had dry suit divers, divers that were expected to be able to maintain their buoyancy and their positioning, and in addition, give an interpretive talk at the same time.
So I've seen both, of course, good buoyancy and bad buoyancy. So, Ben, what's your experience been in aquariums in Europe in these dives?
Yeah, if you see these presentations, it's some of them, they're on their knees in front of the glass or just standing up upright. I've seen one presentation where they didn't have fins on and they were just walking on the bottom like moonwalking. I mean, the bottom of that pool was very insensitive, which is sandy bottom, but it for me, it kind of, it's like, you know, when I see a diver vertical, regardless where it is, it just throws me off, you know. But that's, you know, occupational, I say, occupational problem. But no, you see different presentations, I think. And I think when you're showing a diver as a diver is, neutral and in trim, it's a better representation of the diver being also weightless, just like the fish, instead of something from land that's just standing now on wetland.
I think that's a really good point, right? That, you know, good diving tends to show off the environment for what it is, which is, you know, a weightless environment for those of us who are composed of water. So, Jeff, what brought you to UTD?
So, dive scooters brought me to UTD. You know, I have, as I mentioned earlier, I've been in the occupational diving realm since the early 80s as full time. And in the, you know, mid 90s, the development of technical diving that was occurring throughout the United States was something that I was very much interested in. In many ways, I had been a technical diver without ever getting formal technical education, but I've been ghosting on bulletin boards for many, many, many years and watched the development of GUE or the Hogarthian style diving, team diving that was coming out of South Florida. And while I was working on developing my own personal skills along the same lines, that was not the case throughout the aquarium itself, but the desire for me and a couple of other staff at the aquarium to start to see about introducing dive propulsion vehicles, dive scooters, if you will, into our field activities was what really brought us to UTD. I had contacted Ben McGeever, the president of Dive Extras, and said, you know, Ben, we'd really like to bring these in. He was very much in support of getting a start nucleus of DPVs for our facility. But I said, Ben, my biggest worry is I'm already a semi-experienced DPV user, and I realized that in a work environment, DPVs make everything happen faster. And I want a way to bring all of our divers up to a diving skill level where they're ready to bring something like DPVs in. And Ben said, well, you know what we should do is I should put you in contact with Unified Team Diving. And I had said, oh, yeah, I know Unified Team Diving because I had met Jeff, and I had met Jeff and Andrew. I had known Andrew for many years and knew that they had formed Unified Team Diving because I think I was present at DEMA on the rollout year for Unified Team Diving.
Yeah, that might have been.
And then that's where I first met Jeff. And then we had two local trainers in the Pacific Northwest, Brian Wiederspan and Gina Edgerton. And so Jeff said, hey, this is there. I think there's something we can do for you. And I told Jeff about we're really looking on trying to build a better scientific diving program here and bring DPVs into it. And Jeff said, we're looking to try to bring scientific diving into a curriculum component as part of the UTD program. And for us, that was kind of a match made in heaven, that Jeff was willing to come up to the Northwest, get us connected with our local instructors up here, and we were also willing to work with Jeff to help develop the curriculum components for essentials of scientific diving.
Which we did. Yeah. And that course still stands today, and it's still good.
It's the core of our dive program here. That's our diving program is not the traditional scientific diving program that you would get in an educational organization. So like if you're at a college or university, quite often they're set up to teach somebody, a new student coming in, they're teaching someone who is a non-diver how to be a diver in a scientific diving organization. So they're really teaching them primarily recreational-based diving skills through the equivalent level of maybe rescue diver, and then at the same time introducing them to the different disciplines of scientific diving and some of the applications of that. Our program's quite a bit different. We require people to already have a rescue diver certification or equivalent before they can even enter into our program, either as a staff person or a volunteer. And that's where UTD's content was a great augmentation to what we already had.
It's interesting in talking to you, and I don't know, Ben, if you've taught this course yet or not, but when we built the UTD Scientific Diving course, the most interesting part of it was we took our Essentials of Recreational Diving course, which is generally a 3-day course. We made it 2.5 days, and we put that as the front end. And on the back end of the Essentials of Scientific Diving course that the instructors are teaching, it's completely at the discretion of the instructor. So we built it on purpose like this, so it becomes a very regionalized course, right? So if somebody takes UTD Essentials of Scientific Diving with Jeff in Seattle, they get essentials, and then they get the type of diving that's appropriate to the Pacific Northwest in the U.S. If they do this course with Ben in Denmark, he'll teach them the Essentials of Rec program for 2.5 days, and then the scientific elements that are appropriate to Northern Europe, Hawaii, Asia.
It can also be very dependent on what kind of, field you're in. I mean, it can be used for map making for a wreck, like plotting a wreck. It can be the same techniques we used in China when we did, the cave exploration stuff. There's a lot of things into the name scientific diving that is really broad. I mean, we've done some interesting stuff with a local area here with regards to Poseidonis grass and doing some dives to measure the sight, line of sight visibility from the top to the bottom with a specific disc, and I forgot the name, what the disc is called.
Secchi disc.
Exactly, a Secchi disc. It's like a white, like a plate almost, on a piece of string. And the funny thing is we do that from the surface down, but also from a certain depth even further down to measure, where the sunlight stops and all that sort of stuff. And it was really fun because we did that with a collaboration between a high school. So the biology students of that high school got to learn to dive, because we took it one step further. We took it to an open water class, attached the scientific diving program to that, specifically tied to their class regarding these Poseidonis grass studies they were doing. So it can be very specific or very broad. That's like Jeff Seckendorf said, up to the instructor.
Exactly. And even in our course, as Jeff mentioned, there's 2.5 to 3 days of the essentials content that for us is this really the centerpiece or the heart of the class. And then there's academic introduction to the AAUS, which is the American Academy of Underwater Sciences, and what that form of occupational diving is. So we, with a broad paintbrush, help even our own staff and our volunteers learn what is scientific diving and how that's a part of a larger, broader field of occupational diving within the United States, and what are the requirements to define a dive as a scientific dive. But as you were mentioning, Ben, the disciplines, there's a phenomenal number of disciplines of scientific diving, and in no way could any single scientific diving class cover in depth all of those disciplines. And the application that you mentioned right there is exactly what we envisioned when trying to develop the essentials of scientific diving for UTD, was that an organization could take whatever disciplines and or projects they're specifically working on and provide an emphasis in those areas, done through the lens of unified team diving, done through the precision that that type of training brings to the diving, and all of the advantages that that type of training brings to scientific diving.
Exactly. I think when you mentioned before, it's really a good point. I think you hit the nail on the head there when you said, okay, we want our divers to be able to stay in trim, stay in a certain position in front of the glass so the audience can see them, deal with this funny current situation in the aquarium, and at the same time have some kind of mental capacity left to, you know, actually respond to a question or, you know, communicate interactively through his helper on the floor. And basically that all sums up situational awareness, you know. So and that's the result of our essentials class, basically. So I think for the people out there that are they're questioning on how does this tie in, well, if you have those good buoyancy and positioning skills, you have more situational awareness, more on your task to deal with extra stuff like taking notes or interacting with people or, you know, doing whatever job needs to be done underwater.
It's interesting. I think that, and we'll get back to the training in just one moment, but the idea of scientific diving does not have to be, I need to be a graduate student in marine biology, because it is truly a diving program. You know, I did years of scientific diving in Los Angeles as a sea urchin relocation diver, and I'm as far away from a marine biologist as you can get, but we were moving these urchins off the reefs because they were eating the juvenile kelp and they were killing the kelp for us. So we would pick them up thousands at a time by hand, take them out to a few hundred feet, 60, 80 meters, drop them on the other side of a sandbar, and let the kelp forest rebuild. It's absolutely scientific diving, but it's not very much on the occupational end of it. So that's, I think, a big component of this, is that we want people to understand that they can be contributing divers to the ecology, to the conservation efforts in the ocean and other waterways, without having to be biologists, engineers, all this other stuff. You can just be a diver who just wants to go help a little bit, you know, and that's actually what I'm doing this weekend, right? I'm going to go look for rogue lobster traps. You know, it's I'm not scientific other than I like occupational diving. And you know, we all, as, you know, UTD trained divers, have a certain level of skill that integrates into that. So let's go talk about running these essentials classes in the aquarium, right, for those divers. So what happened to the divers? Well, first of all, was there resistance to this among your dive community? Were people thinking, oh God, I just don't want another class. Oh God, I'm going to have to learn to be this like regimented DIR guy. What happened when you started presenting this, Jeff? Because by now you're an instructor and Joel's an instructor. And
no, all of the above, actually. Our dive program came to Unified Team Diving as kind of a top-down driven recommendation from the dive safety officers. And as such, it's not the typical way that someone comes to a Unified Team Diving class. Most people, if they're coming to you, they're already have an interest, or they may have heard about it somewhere else. And it's the opportunity to teach that person is yours to lose if they contact you. Whereas in our situation, this is a part of their job. And so the teaching challenge is a little bit different. especially for both Joel and myself, in that we needed to convince all of our participants, and this is our staff that we're teaching at this point in time, that there's some significant advantages to learning to dive in this manner. Because while it didn't change the activities that we do underwater, it did make significant changes in how we do all of our activities. And the lens that we were really trying to encourage people to look at this through is we're trying to find, give you a more efficient way to dive, ultimately a safer way to dive, and kind of with all the essentials class, this is going to be a more fun way to dive when you're done with it. And all of those things have come to fruition. And whether they were a reluctant student or a very enthusiastic participant, all of them have taken on a proficiency level in unified team diving skills that is required for them to be part of their job. So whether they loved it initially or didn't love it initially, they're all pretty darn good at it right now. And that's just like something that I mentioned earlier. This is something we check in with our people every single year in an annual skills review. You've got a lot of students in the traditional, transactional type class model take a class, and you may or may not see them again. And this is where, in some of those previous podcasts, Jeff, you talked about the coaching model. We have both kind of a coaching and transactional model going on right now in our facility. And that's why I was so excited to hear about the coaching opportunities that Unified Team Diving had. So buy in all the way across the board. Even our most reluctant participants can't turn off what they learned in the UTD class. I mean,
you can't unsee things, right?
You can't unsee things, and you can't take a person who now is cognizant of buoyancy down to just the less than a half a pound or less than a quarter kilo's worth of weighting differences is something that they will want to address, and their skill level is built to that awareness level now. Their situational awareness been. Many of them had phenomenal situational awareness, but even that was brought to, again, a little bit higher level or a better application level. Inter-team communication was the other thing that really grew by leaps and bounds with unified team diving.
What I found in my experience is when you get divers like that, that have tons and tons of hours of underwater time, and therefore they're completely aware of what's happening around them. So their situational awareness is on par with being on land almost, right? They're so accustomed to being under the water because of the sheer number of hours they've spent there. The thing is, when you start introducing them for the types of skills that the Essentials program gives them, their world opens up because now they can actually react to the things they've only been observing before, like a shift in current or a shift in buoyancy or whatever. It can be anything. I mean, and sometimes we hear that, but these Essentials program, that I'm not a technical diver. I don't need, I don't need that. I don't want twin sets or deep or stuff like that. But hey, a photographer is 5 meters of water. Benefits greatly from these skills. So the ability to act on your situational awareness and being able to react on changing environments, that's the key. And yeah, like you said, regardless how reluctant they are, once they've been through the program and see that they now have some tools to which they can react to it, I mean, no one's going to not use that,
I think it's interesting because we are unified team diving. And, I think traditionally, scientific diving, like much of occupational diving, has been done in solo situations. So when we take your work out into the ocean, doing counts or research or anything, so we've talked really much about being in the aquarium diving, but when you go out in the ocean, did you see a change there with the training, or did you have the team thing pretty well dialed in before that?
I would say we had a good diving program before that, but there isn't any area that the UTD training did not help us improve. We mentioned earlier on the benefit of good buoyancy is that it minimizes the observer effect of the underwater scientists. As you had just said, Jeff, you know, that's some scientific diving, it was associated with a perception of solo or solo type diving, even though buddy diving is one of the caveats of scientific diving. It's required as part of the standards of scientific diving. But how to be a buddy team? It's talked about a lot, but UTD gives you specific skills about how to be a buddy team. I mean, that, as you know, Jeff, that was my biggest aha moment in Essentials class, is when you sent both of my teammates to the surface because I didn't have them in my field of view.
I can't believe I would have done that, Jeff. I'm sorry.
That would never
have happened.
Doesn't sound like Jeff at all.
yes, dude, never do that. I had a lot of, it was done in the most embarrassing and fun way possible, but those are the types of things that really have improved us as an occupational diving organization. Out in the field now, we're more efficient. If you look at videos of us before and after unified team diving training, how we interact with the environment is different, but with those educated eyes, how we position ourselves is different. We don't set up in a situation where someone's back is turned. We use lights day or night to communicate. We all also have the advantage of using underwater wireless communications, and maybe we'll jump into that a little bit in more depth in a few minutes, but the Essentials training really teaches you how to be a team and how to have a common expectation and move underwater as a team. So that's something that having been a scuba instructor for 30 years, I became a much better scuba instructor once I joined the UTD program because I was given the tools of how to teach buddy awareness and team positioning.
What I always saw in the occupational, particularly scientific diving I did, is that the bottom always became a mess. And, you know, we've said this to public safety divers day after day after day, that the reason they have a black water class is because generally they make their own black water. And so I think it's an interesting model with the scientific diving I've been involved with that, you know, often, you know, these divers are destroying the environment that they're trying to save. I once remember I was at DEMA. I saw, I don't want to throw Dan under the bus because I think it's an awesome organization, but I picked up a copy of their magazine, and like the first 10 photographs of divers in that Dan Alert Diver or something, they were holding on to something on the bottom, holding on to a rock, holding on to a plant, holding on to the bottom, touching the bottom. And it's like, you know, I literally went over to their booth at DEMA and said, look at this. These are the divers who are trying to protect the environment that they're wrecking. And so I think that the biggest thing for me in this whole thing was, you know, practice what you preach. Go ahead and save the ocean, but don't wreck it while you're saving it. I get all worked up about this.
But it's the same thing kind of is the thing with photographers. You know, you see they're showing off these beautiful pictures of whatever they're taking pictures of, but when you see them in real life, it's like, wow. Have you looked behind you? You know?
Yeah. We've always suggested photographers go in teams of three because really you're solo diving when you're behind a camera.
I mean, a lot of the photographers, I mean, here in Denmark especially, they do shallow dives and they do it solo. And I've always said, take someone with you to hold a light because you can get much more creative lighting if you get someone to place a light behind a piece of kelp or to the side or whatever, you know. I was so lucky to be involved in a shoot for television for a nature program where we were like hired to help out with the safety planning of the dives and as local guides. So they had two foreign underwater photographers, videographers coming over, and we were supposed to be their, you know, guides and buddies. And it was so fun to see the professionals work, because they work together, and now they used us so they can be more proficient. So we had the light up and we placed the light in different positions, and I think when you tie that into team diving, when there's a task to be completed, regardless if it's photography or counting or whatever, what you sometimes see is that, yes, there are two divers, but it's basically two divers that just so happen to swim in the same body of water. There's no team, there's no coherence, there's no communication. They're just in the vicinity of each other. And, I mean, it doesn't take much, as you have now experienced, Jeff, in all these years, to take it to the next step and to actually be a proactive team together and accomplish more, even though you think that if I'm alone, I can just do the job and don't worry about anyone else, because that's what you always hear.
And that team component has shaped how we do our scientific dives. We do underwater shifting baseline video counts of fish, and a common, you know, underwater transect use is something that we do a lot of it in our facility. And having that concept that I need to find a way to do my scientific diving where I'm never going to separate my team underwater. I'm not going to be carrying or ballasting large loads that are controlled only by the diver. You know, all of the things that help get your equipment from the surface to the bottom.
So you're not using your BC as a lift bag.
Or is it not at all? So and how we get things from the bottom to the surface, how we both move as a team. This is a section that we call working underwater, as part of the essentials of scientific diving, and that's where merging the UTD's our 10 covenants of unified team diving. You start there, and then move how you accomplish your goals underwater so that we're never violating one of the 10 covenants. And by using that lens of the 10 covenants to determine how we do our activities, it's made us more efficient and it's made us a lot safer underwater.
So you've talked a lot about your staff. What's your relationship with volunteer divers?
Well, you know, we really couldn't keep our facility open, and you know, we're currently closed right now due to the COVID situation, without the effort of those volunteer divers. They bring hundreds of hours of assistance to our facility. And what our next goals are is to be able to grow our diving program so that we can provide this same level of essentials training that we've brought into the staff to bring to our volunteers as well. We're hoping to create a cadre of citizen scientists, if you will, or volunteers who are associated or with an AAUS scientific diving facility, and develop, again, a group of scientific divers in the Pacific Northwest that can get involved in projects that, like you were describing, Jeff, and you, Ben, throughout our region.
You did an octopus project, right? Was that all volunteers?
Octopus project.
Or was it shark? Did you do a shark project?
Shark. Six-gill shark research project. We did. And this was prior to becoming AAUS members and prior to becoming part of Unified Team Diving. We did a decade's worth of research on six-gill sharks in the Pacific Northwest. And that was heavily involved our current volunteer diver, our volunteer divers. So we had them doing the exact same activities that our staff did. And many of those volunteer divers brought experience in underwater videography or experiences in technical diving to our program. And they helped grow our program to what it was prior to becoming a nationally recognized scientific diving program.
That's awesome. Yeah. Go ahead, Ben.
They're deep water species, aren't they? Six gills, aren't they usually very, very deep?
Usually very deep. In the Pacific Northwest here, they'll come up into shallower waters. It took us, again, a decade's worth of research to figure out why were all of these sharks in shallow waters in the Pacific Northwest? It's an exciting story. It's really worth a separate story of its own. But we learned that we were diving a lot, diving with a bunch of juvenile and sub-adult six-gill sharks in the Pacific Northwest. Most of them members of the same litters of sharks, and ultimately they grew up in our region for about a 10-year period, or at least the 10 years that we were observing them, and then they move to the outer ocean, and they are spending the majority of their life in deep water, like you mentioned, Ben.
Did you see them shallower because it's so cold there?
That's one of the things. That's one of the reasons they can exist in those shallow depths, is that we do have cold water.
I can attest to that.
Oh yeah, we got lots of hours. Yeah, you get to have to spend an hour and a half at a time in our shark cage underneath the pier, no swimming, just sitting there waiting for the sharks to come to us. One of the neat things about our project was that we worked with free swimming sharks, and we did both tissue biopsy samples as well as visible marker tags and some ultrasonic tag placement on animals. And it was a collaboration with a lot of organizations in the Pacific Northwest, both the National Marine Fisheries Service, the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium, Seattle Aquarium, University of Washington. There was a lot of people involved in the work that we did.
That's really cool. I don't know if this is I'll just ask this. How does side mount fit into your aquarium diving system? Are you still diving side mount, or are you promoting it, or do you think it's a good thing for what you're doing, or is it not something relevant to talk about? Is diving, or what's the story there?
You know, the side mount side, for me, my side mount diving is really through the Z system. And the Z system allowed me to do side mount diving in a manner that keeps it scalable throughout our program. For me, side mount is a tool to have in my toolbox, and I use it when I need it. I don't use it when I don't need it. My personal BC is an Alpha Delta, so I'm basically with a Z system on it. So even if I'm diving back mount, I have a Z system running all of the time on my gear. But I'm the only staff person that has had that be a part of their primary gear loadout. Joel uses it when he needs it, but it's not his normal gear setup. So side mount for us, the Z system specifically lets me dive in open water with a full face mask and communications, and have both the redundancy and the capability of the bailout options that allow us to safely use full face masks in the field. And I can go from single tank diving to, again, back mount, side mount, twins. All of those things can be done basically off the Z system.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you start, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about the Z system and side mount, but I do know that with the full face diving I've been doing, you know, in that system, generally, you never have to take the mask off unless it physically breaks, because, you know, we've always said there are much better ways to go blind than take off your mask, which means you're also taking off your regulator. So that was the beauty of it to me when I was doing full face mask in that system, that, you know, if something failed, generally you could just close a cylinder, open a cylinder, and you're back breathing. We've seen this in a lot of public safety divers where they run into a problem and they take off their full face mask, and now they have no gas and they can't see at the same time. So that's kind of what's interesting to me when you start adding comms into the system, full face and comms, that you have all these other options to fix things that break beyond just taking off the mask and trying to switch to a regulator and not being able to see anything while you're doing it. So that's why I ask.
Oh yeah, it is. And you know, if you don't have the buoyancy precision that we currently expect in all of our divers, maybe you're 30 feet deep over an 80 foot bottom and you'd have to take that mask off. That's usually not the best solution set.
In your 5-degree, 40-degree water. What's next, Jeff, at the aquarium?
What's next for us is moving through this closure. And what's next really for me, and one of the primary things that I'm working on, is getting the scientific diving ready to roll out to our volunteers. So that is kind of the last big giant carrot sitting in front of me is to get that rolled out and start getting our volunteers fully integrated back into our field work like we were using them a decade ago, and so we can use them across the board in our in-exhibit diving as well as our field diving.
And what do you say to somebody who wants to get involved in scientific diving, wants to volunteer someplace, wants to be in an aquarium, you know, interpretive diver? Where do you go? What do you do?
Wow. You know, we'd love to have you. It's the and pretty much every aquarium, if you're involved in it, want to be involved in an aquarium, virtually all aquariums' websites have got a volunteering section to them, and specifically a volunteering diving section if they have volunteer divers. They're always looking for candidates and for people to participate. Some of our longest running volunteers at the aquarium are our volunteer divers. We have some that have been there over 20 years. So the volunteer divers find that they find a community and they find an activity that they love, diving inside aquariums, especially landlocked aquariums where they don't have access to easy ocean diving. And the aquariums themselves, we benefit tremendously by having those people come and help contribute to getting our conservation messages out and making these little fish boxes a whole lot more fun to dive in.
Post-UTD, Jeff, what's the biggest change you've seen in around the consciousness of divers and around the culture of your organization? And, you know, what's the big, giant paintbrush picture that happened in these last, 8 years since, you know, your first essentials class and you become an instructor? It's like, I'm interested in the culture around what happens to an organization that embraces this kind of training.
Well, that's a good question. You know, it's evolved at such a slow pace because we can't seem to do anything quickly that this process of getting through the UTD training really has made people more aware of what occupational diving is. It has shifted their from a recreational mindset to I'm a scientific diver under occupational diving or a commercial diver, because we actually work in both realms within our facility. But the biggest thing that we have, or the change that I've seen, is that we have a much more effective way to communicate and dive as a team, whether we're on the surface or we're underwater. And so that, you know, the tools of our mnemonics for gear match, that pre-dive procedure is built into both our commercial dives as well as our scientific dives. We even have, you know, checklists for that posted when we're bringing new volunteers on board. At every dive exhibit location, here's the main pre-dive checklist that's on the wall. And that pre-dive checklist involves basically the SAD one off to the right, a gear matching section, and an overall master checklist, and a side section on communications. And it takes 5 or 10 minutes to walk through that for the first time for someone. But the objective is that our divers are going to accomplish their gear match and SAD. It's within a minute and a half or so on a dive. And they, with experience, they're very efficient at going through this, and it's prevented us leaving equipment on the surface. It's prevented us getting in the water with equipment that's malfunctioning. It has saved so much that didn't get caught in the past. That's, you know, as a diving safety officer, the core part of my job is the word safety. And those tools and those skills, the way this is thought out, the way that it was learned the hard way in the Florida cave diving community and brought back and shared with everyone, has made us a much safer program overall. And that, for me, is the thing that I don't ever want to walk away from. And I really want to be able to share those skills with the rest of my peers, because the incident rate is not zero in scientific diving, and DSOs want it to be that. And you've got some fantastic tools that can help it bring it to zero. And for something that doesn't have, you know, we say we train for one major and or three minors, or we're going to call the dive. We've got a skill set underwater to recognize when three things have gone wrong, three minors have gone wrong, and call the dive. Or we have a skill set to let us manage a major failure without injuring anybody, without having to compound that failure. That's phenomenal. And that's pretty much something that I have not received through any of my other training throughout my entire career. So that element in UTD has brought the greatest level of safety to our program.
All right. Well, let's bring this to a quick close. And Jeff Christensen, can't thank you enough for joining us. What an awesome experience to be able to talk to you about all this crazy stuff you've done and how you've brought this training into, you know, to your really interesting world of science and aquarium diving. It's cool. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you both, too. It's been a lot of fun talking about it. The UTD diving has been just a phenomenal change for us, and we're excited to see what happens in the future with it.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
And we'll see you all next time.
Hell is going outside. One way. Working down the street.